Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their summer splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome to Health Matters with Fred Bottomer on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Hi there, and thanks a lot for joining me again today. I really do appreciate it. Hope you're having a great weekend. Lots to talk about over the next hour, including new local research into a so-called exercise pill. We'll also talk about a new study on a possible treatment for long COVID, and we'll hear about a relatively new tick-borne disease called alpha-gal. But first, let's get the show started the way we always do with our co-host, Dr. Fred Buchhold. Dr. Buchhold is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. Dr. Buchhold, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Yeah, Fred, it's always my pleasure.
How about a rare treat for you this week? Let's let you do some pontificating on some basic health topics. Since you are a general internist, got some basic questions for you about healthcare, the questions you should ask your doctor. Starting with Dr. Buchhold, which screenings should people get?
Kind of a couple of simple things. First, it kind of depends on your age, but the people I see generally are patients over the age of 40. Below the age of 40, when I see a patient, my main concerns are really about making sure their vaccines are up to date and really looking for dangerous behaviors. So, you know, something as simple as like wearing a seatbelt when you drive a car. Are you smoking? Are you doing other stuff you shouldn't be doing or doing it in excess? Safe sexual practices. So I'm trying to avoid, to talk about the stuff that if stopped now prevents long-term consequences later on in life. That's kind of that first pile of humans. After 40, it gets a little bit different. We start, my job as a general internist is really three things. One is I look for, overall general health and trying to prevent the onset of disease. The second job is really to, people that have risk factors for disease or chronic disease is to deal with those and treat those. And then the third part of my practice is really about, people with like kind of acute issues. So like they're coming in, their back hurts, they have a runny nose or, anything else and dealing with that. So what we're really talking about, Fred, is the second problem is, how do you prevent or delay the onset of the disease? And I kind of break this down to what do people die of in the United States? Well, most of us are going to die from either heart disease or cancer. There's a lot of other things, too, that we unfortunately die from. But those are really the two big things, and that's where my work really – that's where I do the bulk of my work in that regard of screening. So first is like when thinking about cardiovascular disease, and, we've talked about this plenty of times before, but really the goal here is to look for risk factors and try to mitigate or deal with those risk factors. The biggest risk factor for having heart disease is your age, so there's not a lot I can do with that, but I certainly can make sure that you're aging as gracefully as possible, recommending exercise, good diet, an overall, healthy weight and all those things. But then there's the other kind of things of what your cholesterol is doing, what your blood pressure is like, and whether or not you have diabetes, and then last, whether or not you smoke. Those are the things I can kind of what I would call modifiable. I can try to do something about that. If somebody's smoking, I say stop smoking. For cholesterol, I will check your cholesterol. We usually start that at the age of 40, and every 3 to 5 years after that, you don't have to check it yearly necessarily. And what that does is just helps me kind of gauge your risk for having heart disease. And once you have a certain enough risk, that's when I would recommend therapy for cholesterol, which is typically a statin. So you may know that as, you know, most common one is Lipitor, or Zocor, or Crestor. And what those do, I mean, they do lower your cholesterol, but what I always tell my patients is that what they really do is prevent the onset of heart attacks. And so, you know, even if you don't lower your cholesterol that much with Lipitor, I'm still actually improving the odds that you'll have a heart attack, or I should say, will not have a heart attack. So that's what the benefit of those drugs are. For hypertension, you know, that's something we screen quite a bit. We look at your blood pressure every time you come and see us. If you're having a sustained high blood pressure, I would say you probably have hypertension. We would start treatment for that. And then last is we screen often for diabetes too. And again, this isn't something that has to be done every single year. Depends on the risk. We'll do it, you know, once every couple years, or if somebody we think is higher risk, I would do it once a year. So those are really the big things in terms of talking about cholesterol. There's other things that can be done. You may hear about coronary scans or coronary imaging. Typically, I won't do those for screening. I do those more when I suspect that disease is present. Those aren't really, I don't routinely recommend those, and national organizations don't recommend to do those. I know a lot of, there's a lot of advertisements out there for that, but I don't think that's really appropriate. So that's cardiovascular disease. For cancer, the other one is kind of an interesting kind of point. I think many would say, well, if you screen for cancer, the more you screen, the better. And while that sounds logical, it actually doesn't work. And the reason for this is kind of difficult to explain and interesting, but more or less the answer is, like, all of us have probably, so I'm 43, Fred, I've probably already had cancer once or twice in my life, and my immune system has recognized it and chewed it out and spit it out before it ever became anything major. What we want to do when we screen for cancer is find the ones that can really progress and grow and cause us the capital C cancer that all of us are worried about and stress about getting, and that requires treatment, without finding the little C cancer, the ones that will probably never really cause a problem, and treat those with the heavy medicines we have for cancer treatment, and you may not need that. And so it's a very complicated problem, but there's really kind of three ways or four ways, I guess, of cancer screening that are kind of in mainstream now and kind of generally accepted practice. The first is colon cancer screening. We've talked about this before, and I know you've had a lot of information about this on your show, Fred, but generally recommend starting that at the age of 45 in most adults that don't have any kind of history. The other general rule with cancer screening is basically if you had a family member who's been diagnosed with a particular cancer that we have a screening for, we recommend starting that in general 10 years before that. So if my dad had colon cancer at the age of 45, I would need to start my screening at the age of 35. So as a kind of example, and this is something you can talk to your doctor about, of course, too. So cancer screening is a couple of different ways. So the first one, the common practice is to do a colonoscopy, which is, you know, basically a gastroenterologist or a surgeon taking a tube, a fiber optic tube, and sticking it in your rectum and going through your colon and looking for any kind of evidence of cancer or precancers. If you do a colonoscopy, you need that every 10 years. So if you start at 45 and it's normal, you'll get one at 55. There's a couple other newer tests that are really, let me just say the last thing about colonoscopy is it takes some time. So, like, you know, you have to do the prep, which is you kind of pooping your brains out for a day before the test. And then when you go to the test, you can't really work that day. So it kind of takes 2 days out of your life, which, you know, for busy people is not always easy to do. You know, we've never in the United States have had a really high screening rate with colonoscopies because I think part of that problem. There's a couple newer tests that are also very effective that are basically cards that you basically smear a little bit of your stool on. When you do that, you can submit those cards to a lab, and then they can do, depending on the type of test, they can kind of do some screens for cancer that way. The advantage of those is that you don't have to have a huge prep. You have to kind of smear your own poop on a card, which isn't the most pleasant thing, but it's not that bad. And, you know, those are done either every 2 or 3 years, and they're also very good. I mean, they will detect cancer if it's there. So that's the conversation I have with patients. I'll say, Fred, just if it helps anybody, I'm not sharing too much here, but I'm 43. I'll be 44 this year. When I turn 45, I'm due for screening. I'll probably do a colonoscopy first. And if that's normal from then on, I'll likely do those cards. a decade later instead of doing another colonoscopy. At least that's kind of my plan, you know, assuming I don't have any other problems. So just to give you a sense of that. So that's colonoscopy. The other two things are a mammogram for women to screen for breast cancer. Usually start in their 40s, although, you know, I think more common guidance than if you go Google breast cancer screening, you'll have about 7 different guidelines to try to sort through. So definitely between the ages of 50 to 60, I would recommend at least a mammogram every 2 years and continuing that through your 60s. And then stopping around 70 or 75, it depends on kind of the situation and what your previous mammograms have had. The other types of screenings are cervical cancer screening for women, which is either done by an OB or, you know, I still do them in my practice too. And fortunately now, most cervical cancers are caused by a virus called the human papillomavirus. That's one that there's a vaccine for now. So, you know, hopefully people that are younger than 30 have gotten their vaccine. But, you know, women, we still do that, but we can do HPV testing. It's kind of spread out off, and we do cervical cancer screening, which I think is nice. It's not a very comfortable exam. So that's kind of the third cancer screening. And then the fourth is lung cancer screening for those that have a fairly heavy smoking history. So the general rule is about if you've been smoking a pack per year for 35 years, we kind of take that multiple together and call it a 35-pack year history. That's usually kind of the limit, maybe 30-pack year to do cancer screening. If you smoke 2 packs a day, then you would have to do that for 15 or 17 years to qualify for that. And that's something that's done annually once you do the first one, depending on what we see. So those are really the mainstream cancer screens. The guidelines that I follow don't recommend prostate cancer screening because to that point, a lot of men will have prostate cancer, but it usually doesn't progress. So we only really screen in high-risk populations or in certain conditions, but just I don't really offer it to most healthy men that I see. If they ask for it, if they prefer to have it, I'll talk to them about it, and I will order it if they're interested, but I won't necessarily do it.
Okay, so I'm going to give you the award for the most thorough answer to any question I've ever asked. And remind me not to say pontificate again to you. But there was so much great information in there. Really do appreciate it. I've got a ton more questions that we should ask an internal medicine doctor, but let's save those for another time. Dr. Buckle, thanks so much for your time and expertise again this week. Really do appreciate it.
Of course, Fred. Thank you.
Dr. Fred Buckle is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health, St. Louis University Hospital. Coming up next on Health Matters, we'll take a look at some new local research into a so-called exercise pill. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. You're listening to Health Matters on KMOX.
Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their Summer Splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back to Health Matters with Fred Bottomer on KMOX.
Researchers at Washington University School of Medicine are working on what's called an exercise pill, which could possibly mimic the benefits of a full workout. Any such pill is still a long way off. Let's find out more about it by talking with the principal investigator on this trial, Dr. Bahe Eljandi. He's a medicinal chemist at Washington University School of Medicine. He's also a professor of anesthesiology there. Dr. Al-Jandid, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
So tell us about this new exercise pill that you're working on.
Sure. I'll talk to you about the idea because the pill is not there yet. It's not available for people to try or take. This is an idea of targeting a group of proteins we've been like working on for the last decade. These group of proteins are called estrogen-related receptors, and they are responsible for activating some of the most important metabolic pathways in tissues of high energy demand, like muscles and heart, brain and kidney. So there was no chemical tool or chemical probe to activate this group of protein, three of them. But for the first time, we were able to create these like chemical tools that can activate all of them. And the beauty of this, if you can activate this group of proteins, this kind of activation boosts the natural metabolic pathways that typically respond to exercise. So in effect, what we saw in animals, what's happening is this kind of chemical compound is making the body of the mouse acting like it is training for a marathon. And this, of course, leads to increase in energy expenditure and faster metabolism of fat in the body. So the hope in the next like 5 years or so is that we can use our newer generations of these molecules and develop it into a drug.
Who would benefit from something like this?
A huge population will benefit from something like this. Think about now our society and in general, we're aging like never before. So at old age, we tend to lose muscle mass and we don't have the same ability to exercise. So this is a group of populations that can benefit from this. In aging, there is another group for people with physical limitations as well. This would be very beneficial. And the exercise mimetics idea is not kind of replacing exercise completely, but it's probably enhancing the effect of exercise as well. The other thing is that you also get the benefits, the indirect benefits that you would get from exercise if you have a drug like that. And it has shown that it can show positive effects in many other like disease indications like neurodegenerative diseases, kidney diseases, or heart failure.
So let's say down the road, this exercise pill becomes a reality. What might that mean for actual exercise? Do you think that will still be needed?
I believe actual exercise will still be needed, and we should always exercise if we can, because there is also like gaps here. We don't know if like this kind of drug, if it became a reality, would it also give us the benefits that we get from exercise, like mind benefits, these like rushing of endorphins, the happiness we feel after exercise. I'm not quite sure we'll get the same beneficial effects.
How far away are we from anything becoming reality?
I think it's coming in the next 5 years, I would guess. I'm hoping that within the next 5 years, we'll have something at least in clinical trials. I don't think we're far from it.
So what would happen in those clinical trials?
So like whenever you have like the new generations that we're developing right now, you need to make sure and ensure the safety and efficacy of these molecules. And here you do a lot of studies in animal models to make sure that they are safe enough and efficacious enough to move forward. And once this is achieved, you start like going for like clinical trials after you go through all of the regulatory approvals. And in clinical trials, you start like going through the process, which takes also like an additional few years to get a drug to be approved for humans to use.
So tell me again about the need for such a pill.
So the need is because you have like several groups of people. So you have people who cannot exercise, who have physical limitations or disabilities. These people want to get the benefit of exercise at all. But if you can have such a pill, they can gain the same benefits that someone is exercising are gaining. And these benefits, as I previously mentioned, they have indirect consequences on many other organs and tissues in the body. So when you exercise, you have a direct effect on your muscle, skeletal muscles, and your cardiovascular system. And there is a consequent indirect effect, positive effect, that's been proven and shown over and over that can be beneficial in neurodegenerative diseases or cardiovascular diseases or obesity or type 2 diabetes or metabolic syndromes or even cancer. In addition, you can use it, hopefully, this is another idea, in combination with the new weight loss drugs, like Ozempic and other drugs, because there is a fear of, like, probably down the road when people continue using it and they are not exercising, they cannot maintain the muscle mass they have or lose some muscle mass. So if you can have a combination of, like, this new drug when it becomes a reality and the older drugs, that can be also adding a beneficial effect to patients and help improve overall life quality of patients.
Anything else you want people to know, Dr. Al-Jani?
Yes, of course. I want people to know that they have always, if they are looking to use any of the recreational drugs or drugs in general, they have to look at the drugs that's approved by FDA and never, ever use anything like they purchase from online without having, like, being approved from FDA. This is for their safety. This is my warning or my advice for anyone not to use anything that's not approved by FDA.
Dr. Al-Jani, thanks so much for your time today. Really do appreciate it.
It was a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Bahe Al-Jani is a medicinal chemist at Washington University School of Medicine, where he's also an associate professor of anesthesiology. Coming up next on Health Matters, we'll take a look at a new study on a possible treatment for long COVID. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. You're listening to Health Matters on KMOX.
Welcome back to Health Matters with Fred Bottomer on KMOX.
Washington University researchers are leading the only medication trial in the U.S. to help people with long COVID brain fog issues. Let's talk about it with the head of Washington University's Department of Psychiatry, Dr. Eric Lenz. Dr. Lenz, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Thank you.
So tell us about this study. What are you researching?
We're testing a medication called fluvoxamine. This is a medication often used for depression and anxiety, but it has a lot of properties that we think might be helpful for long COVID as well, and particularly the brain fog and related features that we see that are afflicting many people with long COVID.
So tell us about some of those types of cognitive decline associated with long COVID. What are we talking about?
Well, there was a recent study in the New England Journal of Medicine that showed that long COVID symptoms can produce a cognitive decline of the equivalent of losing 6 IQ points. Now, fortunately, that doesn't happen to everyone who has COVID, but we know that there are millions of people in America who feel like their brains are not working as well as they used to before they had COVID. Again, the common symptom of brain fog, along with other things like fatigue, depression, and anxiety, seem to be some sort of feature of this virus.
So tell us how your fluvoxamine study will work.
Yeah, so fluvoxamine itself has anti-inflammatory and neuro-restorative properties, and it was shown effective in acute COVID-19 a few years ago in a study we did. We're now doing a longer period of study where people get 16 weeks of fluvoxamine. And importantly, people in the study, if they initially get placebo, then they can opt to get fluvoxamine later on in the study. So everyone gets a chance to see if they benefit from the medication. And then we measure their symptoms like brain fog, as well as their cognitive function using batteries, testing things like memory and information processing speed.
Are you hopeful this works?
I am. We've recruited over 100 people in the study. We're hopeful that we'll be able to finish the study in this year, 2024. And I would invite anyone who's at home listening to this, thinking that they're suffering from these long COVID symptoms like brain fog, to give us a call and see if the study might be right for them.
You're researching fluvoxamine, and I know you told us about some of its prior uses. Has it also been used on sepsis?
It has. Now, to be clear, that's only been in what are called preclinical or animal studies, although there are people interested in doing clinical trials on that. And that, again, seems to be because of its anti-inflammatory properties. What we're talking about is a body whose immune system is out of control. And we think that this kind of persistent inflammation is going on in long COVID, and it's affecting the brain as well as other organs.
We're talking with Dr. Eric Lenz. Dr. Lenz is head of Washington University's Department of Psychiatry. about WashU's study about a medication trial to help people with long COVID brain fog. Dr. Lenz, did you see that study last week out of Australia that said that long COVID, the post-infection problems are seen in a lot of illnesses, not just COVID-19? What do you think of that?
Well, that's right. I think symptoms like chronic myalgia have been known for some time. There's really not been the kind of research on these that one would like to have, especially given that viruses like having the flu are so common. The idea that a lot of maybe chronic symptoms that people have in our society might be post-viral is really intriguing.
I know there's a lot of people that may raise an eyebrow when you say you have long COVID symptoms. How real is this?
That's a really good question. And I think initially there was some skepticism about long COVID that people might be just, I guess, imagining their symptoms. I am not one of the people who believes that. I think there's really good evidence now that this is a real syndrome. Tests of things like brain structure and brain function, as well as performance on objective neuropsychological tests, have really shown this long COVID problem to be borne out. And I think we have to realize that this is often happening in people who were previously highly healthy with no sorts of problems prior to contracting COVID.
Dr. Lenz, one more time, go over some of the symptoms of long COVID.
To be clear, there are different kinds of symptoms in long COVID. Sometimes people have, for example, postural hypotension or persistent breathing symptoms. But the issue that we're looking at in this study is what we would call neuropsychiatric or brain-related long COVID. That is, long COVID symptoms that are affecting brain functioning. And the most common of those is a difficulty in concentrating or thinking, which long COVID sufferers often call brain fog. I think that's a really good description of it for sufferers. But there are related brain symptoms, which can include anxiety, depression, and a subjective sense of fatigue as well. So we think that all these kinds of brain symptoms are related. And again, that it's some sort of post-viral syndrome, probably marked by persistent inflammation, as well as actual damage to the brain.
Dr. Lenz, one more time, go over the details of your study that's going on at WashU, and how many people do you hope to enroll?
Well, we hope to enroll almost 100 more this year. The details are that if someone is eligible for the study, that is, if they've contracted COVID previously, and they have these persistent symptoms like I described, symptoms like brain fog, they're likely to be eligible. And then, interestingly, what we do is first allow people to try out different doses of the medication fluvoxamine, and they get to choose the starting dose that they prefer starting. We think having a patient preference and choice in the study is really important. And then in the first phase of the study, they receive fluvoxamine starting at that dose and increasing as tolerated to the optimal dose for that person, or they receive a placebo. Having a placebo control is critical in these studies for an adequate test of the medication. Then in the second phase of the study, they are definitely able to receive fluvoxamine, no chance of placebo. One more thing to note is that this study can be done fully remotely or at home. In fact, people can come in for only a small number or even no visits, which means you were in St. Louis. You could be hours away from St. Louis and still participate in this study from your home without even having to come to the academic medical center. We're really trying to make this a very patient and person-friendly study.
Dr. Lenz, thanks so much for your time again today. Really do appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Eric Lenz is the director of the Healthy Mind Lab at Washington University School of Medicine, where he's also director of the Department of Psychiatry. Coming up next on Health Matters, we'll take a look at a relatively new tick-borne disease called alpha-gal. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. You're listening to Health Matters on KMOX.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with autopay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without autopay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome back to Health Matters with Fred Bottomer on KMOX.
A tick bite gave a Jefferson County woman a strange allergic condition.
This is Stuart McMillan.
It's very, very frustrating.
24-year-old Maggie Holmes from Crystal City was on a camping trip in Piedmont, Missouri back in August. Remembers getting bit by a tick. 3 days later, while still camping, she started having strange reactions to certain foods.
My entire body just basically feels like it's shutting down. It starts to hurt really bad. Joint pain. I can't move. I feel like I have a fever.
A personal trainer she was already working with helped her narrow down what foods were affecting her. Then a couple months later,
it did come back positive.
She was diagnosed with alpha-gal syndrome.
There's different levels. Anything greater than 0.10 is positive test for alpha-gal, and mine was at 7.96.
Holmes says grocery shopping will never be the same again, but thankfully she has an app to help with that.
It has a scanner on it, so when I'm grocery shopping, I can just scan a barcode and it'll tell me if it's safe or not safe or maybe safe.
Let's find out a little bit more about alpha-gal syndrome. Dr. Farron Mannion is the chair of the Department of Medicine at Mercy St. Louis. He's also an infectious diseases physician. Dr. Mannion, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Thank you for having me.
So what exactly is alpha-gal syndrome?
So it's a relatively new disease. It's a syndrome that's associated with having had a prior tick bite and then getting exposed to what we consider red meat through ingestion. And it could be, you know, months later or years later, and developing what appears to be like an allergic reaction. It could be mild, it could be very severe at times that requires people to go to the emergency room. And the reaction could be like tongue swelling, you know, hives, you know, rash, itching. It's a kind of a curious disease because as opposed to usual severe allergic reactions to things that we're familiar with, like, you know, bee stings or immediate reaction to certain kind of food products, alpha-gal syndrome, the reaction doesn't occur until a few hours after you ingest the food that may actually have this product in it. So often it's actually not diagnosed readily because when people get a reaction that appears to be allergic, it's often several hours after a meal that might actually involve red meat, especially. So it's a kind of a reaction that's delayed, that's allergic, you know, in response. And it follows having red meat, could be beef, could be pork, could be venison, could be rabbit, but not chicken or poultry. And for years, I think people were probably having these types of reactions, and it was never clear exactly what the cause of it is, and now we have a better idea.
How common is this?
Well, it is common enough that, you know, certainly in infectious disease realm, as well as the allergy immunology realm, a lot of allergy immunologists actually have quite a few of these patients in their practice. You know, there may be 100,000 people each year in the country that may actually have it. And I suspect that there may actually be more that maybe haven't been diagnosed yet.
What's the treatment for alpha-gal?
Well, there's really no specific treatment. Unfortunately, what often happens is that you've already been kind of sensitized to this particular, you know, byproduct, which is the alpha-gal, which is in mammalian meat, like red meat. And it's a result of having been exposed to the tick bite. And it doesn't happen all the time, obviously. Many people have tick bites and never have any problems with it through food allergies. But some people have this problem. And so what we often recommend is obviously not to get a tick bite if you can. Avoid the exposure, then that way you don't get sensitized. And then, of course, once you're diagnosed with it, you'll have to avoid eating any red meat or anything that may actually have byproducts of beef or pork in it. So sometimes, for example, the gel capsules that some medications use may, or gelatin or jello or some dairy products, obviously, may also have alpha-gal in it. So people may have to avoid those food products as well. You have to give it time. And as time goes on, some people can actually kind of grow out of it, but some people don't. At least we're still kind of in our infancy and really understanding this disease. But when you do obviously have the allergic reaction, then you treat it just like any other severe allergy if it's severe. And so you sometime when it's severe, you have to go to the emergency room, get, you know, epinephrine and get steroids and try to essentially treat the allergic reaction just like you would with any kind of allergy. And then try to avoid being bitten by ticks that may actually reactivate your predilection to getting this. So especially with the summertime and springtime ahead, you really want to have people avoid tick bites.
We're talking with Dr. Farron Mannion. Dr. Mannion is the chairman of the Department of Medicine at Mercy St. Louis, where he's an infectious diseases physician. Dr. Mannion, go over again some of those tips on how to protect yourself against tick bites.
Yeah, so we're obviously are starting the tick season already, which is really has to do with outdoor activities, especially if you're going to be in the wooded areas. If there's a lot of grass, there's potential ticks, especially in the region that we live in the Midwest and South and really across the country in many places, ticks are a huge problem, especially in the spring and summertime. So you really need to try to protect your skin from exposure to ticks, which means that you need to wear, you know, long socks and try to have sleeves that are covering your arms if you're going to be in a wooded area. You need to, before you get out there, possibly use some kind of a tick repellent, anything that has DEET in it as a repellent could actually avoid being exposed to ticks on the skin. And then after you've been to these places, when you come back inside, you should really check very closely for anything that looks like a potential tick that may still be on you. And some of these ticks, as we're all familiar with, are very, very small. There are these what we call seed ticks that are very tiny and you may actually miss it. So often we say, you know, do your due diligence, make sure that you have no ticks on you when you come back. And if you do have it, then try to pull it off with some tweezers. Try not to squeeze the ticks so that you don't get exposed to any other germs that tick may actually have. Those are the things that you can definitely do to try to minimize your exposure to ticks.
Which tick is responsible for alpha-gal syndrome?
Well, potentially many ticks can, but the one that has been associated with is called the Lone Star tick, which is, of course, has a very broad range in the U.S., including the South and the East and, of course, the Midwest. But it's got a very broad range, and it keeps moving up north, and they're even seen Alpha Gallop in Maine. So it's much of the U.S. may actually have ticks that can carry the product that's associated with Alpha Gal.
And what are the symptoms again, Dr. Mannion?
Yeah, so the main symptoms of Alpha Gal syndrome really has to do with allergy symptoms, and some can be mild, some can be severe. So it really is very much similar to any other type of allergy that some people may have. So you're talking about a rash, we're talking about itching, we're talking about in more severe forms, tongue swelling, we're talking about hives, we're talking about, unfortunately, sometimes difficulty breathing, eye swelling. And I think one of the clues that perhaps alpha-gal may be the cause of one's symptoms is if you're having these types of allergic type presentation without an obvious cause, then alpha-gal could potentially be the culprit. That is, there are people who just for no reason start having tongue swelling and rash and hives, and they don't know what actually caused it. Then we say, well, you know, how long has it been since you had a meal that potentially had a beef in it, or pork, or some type of meat in it? The thing to remember is that it doesn't have to be just immediately before the reaction. It could be, you know, 2 to 6 hours after the meal. So a lot of times people don't even associate it with the meal because it's often delayed. So if you have a reaction that seems to be allergic with all the things we just talked about without any obvious trigger, then I would say especially if it's after having a meal a few hours later, then alpha-gal may be a potential cause.
Dr. Mannion, thanks so much for your time again. Really do appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Dr. Farron Mannion is the chair of the Department of Medicine at Mercy St. Louis, where he's an infectious diseases physician. And that's all the time we have for this week's show. Thanks so much for listening. I really do appreciate it. If there are parts of this show you want to hear again, please log on to KMOX.com and look under the podcast section. Or you can download the Odyssey app and favorite KMOX. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. Please join me again next week for another edition of Health Matters on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.